Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There aren't many football managers who would start a fight with Muhammad Ali.
Well, are you going to stop it?
No, I want to fight him.
But then Brian Clough wasn't most football managers. The acid-tongued genius decked Roy Keane, scrapped with hooligans, and terrorised the tea ladies. And they all still loved him.
For me, the best manager of all time was Brian Clough.
He's the nutter's nutter.
The man was a complete one-off.
Welcome to the life of Brian. And welcome back to The Upshot. My name is Jack Rivlin. Zach Sweeney Lynch is here as ever.
Hello, Jack.
And we are joined once again by Mr. James Gregg, star of our Roy Keane episode, voice of golf, presenter, commentator extraordinaire. Welcome back, Greggy.
It's a pleasure to be back. And the last episode was the Roy Keane episode where the impressions, the accents were absolutely shocking, and I'm hoping for more of the same here today.
You won't be disappointed.
No. At least we've got your accent to rely on to do our...
Well, yeah. I mean, there's about a 40-mile difference between where I grew up and where Cluffy was most well-known. I can't promise anything. I think you end up sounding a bit like Dean Saunders or some of the other guys who played under him, don't you? You end up doing the impression of the impression. We'll give it a go.
Yeah, Cluffy's a lot more nasal.
Yeah.
It's funny, because he's from Middlesbrough. Yeah, I always kind of associated him as having a Yorkshire accent, just because he's so synonymous with Yorkshire.
Well, I suppose halfway between kind of Nottingham, Derby and Middlesbrough is the middle of Yorkshire.
But so I was wondering about this too, and then it was saying Middlesbrough, Yorkshire, but Middlesbrough's like...
Middlesbrough's Yorkshire.
Is it? Technically, yeah. Technically.
You think of it as like...
Northeast, somewhere up there.
Okay.
We're going to sound like absolutely... We already get accused of that.
I am judging you both. I really am.
I should say, Greggy, by the way, Roy Keane is our second most popular episode ever.
Nothing to do with me, all to do with Roy. And the accents.
You've got a dedicated fan base.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess this one's a bit different because we are all a bit young to remember Cluffy's pomp and managerial career. And in my research for this episode, it dawned on me like just how big and famous a figure he was at the time. Obviously because he's super successful, but also he's this like mad, unpredictable, charismatic bloke who's always giving interviews. I'm trying to think, like, who's the equivalent now? Because, like, you know, Pep and Klopp, they loom large in the imagination. But they're not delivering, like, mad comments on a weekly basis.
No. I'm trying to think of a current modern-day equivalent of Cluffy.
I say Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho's your closest, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think he does have that sort of legendary status already that you can tell that in 20 years' time, people are going to look back at early Chelsea Mourinho as this, like, quite... I don't want to say revolutionary figure, but so he's such a strong character that delivered so many amazing sound bites and was such a sort of charismatic motivator that he sticks so much in the memory of that whole period of football.
I think so. And also, you know, you get a lot of mayo or tax added to the stories about Jose, and I think it's the same. I know that defeats the whole point of this entire podcast, by the way. But there is always a little bit of extra on the stories of Cluffy, isn't there? And I think that's exactly what's going to happen with Jose. So you're probably right. It's a good comparison, mate. Yeah,
we like a bit of mayo on our stories. On this podcast.
Too right. It's a whole
general
point.
Not to reveal the magic too much. Yeah, well, should we kick off, Zach?
Yeah. So obviously, Brian Clough, we really associate with his managerial career, but kind of actually surprised me to discover that he was also an incredible player as well. He played for Middlesbrough and Sunderland as a striker. He was absolutely prolific. So he scored 251 league goals in 274 matches, which is, that's like Haaland levels.
Mental.
Yeah.
What league?
That was in Division 2, but he has the highest goals per game ratio of any player who scored more than 200 goals in England.
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought Jimmy Greaves was the sort of king of the...
Yeah, the benchmark. Yeah. But that's impressive though, isn't
it?
Yeah. Does that explain some of Clough's... Because he's a big-headed bloke. He, much like Mourinho, he absolutely loves himself. Do you think that's part of it? You know, he just knows he was fucking good himself.
Yeah, I think so. Because that's always sort of the stick that's used to beat some managers that never had successful playing careers.
And Mourinho.
Like Mourinho. But obviously, Clough can walk the walk as well as talking the talk.
So. And also in that era... The gap between the second and first tier is nothing like it is now, right?
No, exactly. Yeah, you quite often get somebody who'd score 25 goals in Division 2, wouldn't you? And then the next season they'd go and do it in the top level. Mm-hmm. And that's... So obviously he was a serious player.
Yeah.
That's so cool, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Imagine if there was a player like that now. They'd be legendary... Well, they wouldn't actually. They'd probably be sitting on the bench for Chelsea.
Yeah, Man City, yeah.
But, like,
what do you mean, who's banging them in the second division?
Yeah, if somebody.
Mitrovic?
He proved his mustard in the Premier League. But even during Brian's playing career, there were signs of his trademark temper. So he fell out with his Middlesbrough teammates. He accused them of deliberately letting in goals to win bets. Which didn't go down too well then. There was one game they drew 6-6 with Charlton and he flipped off at full time and was like, how many fucking goals am I going to have to score if you're going to let in that many? He also, he played a match on his wedding day.
What?
So I think he was playing for Middlesbrough at this point and they were playing Leyton Orient. And yeah, they did the wedding in the morning and then he nipped off to play a game and scored.
Oh, and it was after the ceremony?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's probably the wrong way round to do it.
Yeah, do it before and then get married late. But weddings weren't as big a deal back then, were they? They ended earlier. My friend's dad, when they got married, he made them leave early to go to the hotel so he could watch Match of the Day.
Seriously?
Yeah. But maybe that says more about him than about weddings.
There's actually a quote from later in Clough's career, from his managerial career, that he says him and his wife used to go to the cinema every Saturday, but he always made them leave early to catch Match of the Day. And she's like, I missed the last 10 minutes of every film I've ever seen.
Quite crucial plot twist.
Yeah.
Sixth Sense looked very different without the ending.
His successful playing career, though, is brought to an abrupt close when he suffers a really bad knee injury. He's 29 playing for Sunderland and it ends his career. So he has like a year out of the game where he's really down in the dumps. Mm. And eventually he's appointed manager at Hartlepool United, who are in the fourth division. And at the time he says that He had to tour the local pubs to raise funds to keep the club afloat. So they're like really sort of struggling. He also got a coach driver's license so that he could drive the team to away matches.
I love that.
That's awesome.
But yeah, he does pretty well there. Also, this spell is quite significant because he appoints Peter Taylor as his assistant manager, and this begins their famous and incredibly successful partnership. But after he does a few seasons at Hartlepool and then he gets snapped up by Derby, who are in the second division, and very quickly he puts his stamp on the squad. So by his second season there are only four players left from the squad that he inherited. He also sacks the club secretary, the groundsman and the chief scout, as well as two tea ladies that he caught laughing after a Derby defeat.
So that's a good early example of his just like mental...
Absolutely cutthroat, yeah.
Totalitarian
approach. Yeah, that's actually the way to put it, I think. Can't even have a joke about it. Yeah. Were they laughing about the defeat or just laughing?
I think it was just he just caught them giggling after a game.
Giggling at page four of the Daily Star He's just walked in and said, right, see you later, here's your P45, ladies. What the fuck is that about?
Yeah. He was also just as brutal with his players. So in that first season, Derby are playing Leeds in the semi-final of the League Cup, and you know, Brian hates Leeds, as we'll come on to. But it's a really tight game, and just as it gets into stoppage time, Bobby Saxton, who's a defender, punches the ball away for a corner and obviously gives away a penalty and Leeds score and they lose the match. So everyone's gutted. And the next morning, they come into training and Brian just tells Bobby he's been sacked.
Fucking hell.
Jesus.
Yeah, so really brutal. But in the second season, his brutal streak does pay dividends because in their second season, Derby are promoted to the first division. And in 1972, they win the league. So it's Derby's first ever title and pretty incredible achievement to bring a team up from the second division and do that. So you'd think that they'd go pretty mad celebrating, but the celebrations were pretty tame, sorry to report. So the team had actually headed off to Mallorca because it's a bit of a weird situation. They'd already played their final game of the season and they were waiting for Leeds and Liverpool, who were fighting them for the title, to play theirs. And both of those two teams didn't win. So Derby won the title and the team were in Mallorca. And the craziest that it got was they all got these sort of novelty sombreros and danced around the pool. We've got a picture here of them sitting on the,
the
diving board.
Good fun.
A few little japes, but wasn't too wild. It was no Jack Grealish being wheelchaired to the airport after a 3-day Ibiza bend. Though actually, I was thinking about this earlier, and obviously in those days, players did drink quite a lot regularly and smoke and everything. So maybe they just didn't feel the need to do that when they actually won the league, because they were probably like,
yeah, they probably doing that anyway.
Whereas, lot of my like parents and their friends say that about those days is like people drank a lot, but they didn't like binge drink in the same way. They were more just constantly drinking.
Just constantly topped up.
Yeah, I don't know. Different era.
So was it a pretty tame party?
It was. So
to be fair, when they won the World Cup in 1966, it was quite tame, wasn't it?
Apparently so. Yeah. And weren't the wives segregated as well?
Yeah. Made to go to their own dinner.
their own dinner. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
There had been an incident earlier in the tournament where Bobby Charlton he'd like put mayonnaise in the pockets of loads of the FA Blazers, as in the Blazers worn by the actual Blazers. And so I think maybe they were like being warned to be on best behaviour or something. But it was quite like be home by 10 sort of celebration, I think.
Yeah.
One of the Derby players was asked years later about those celebrations. He's shown the picture and he's like, oh, what no one knows is that we all jumped off the diving board into the pool after it was taken. Ron Webster's hat was so tightly fastened under his chin that it choked him quite badly. Whoa.
The tabloids are all there hiding in the bushes, hoping for something to happen and going, this is fucking awful.
The pool with their hats on. Some of the others who didn't join them in Mallorca were listening to the Leeds game in their car radio, just like parked in a car park with their girlfriends. And they said, we listened. And when the final whistle went, we jumped out of the car, hugged each other, hugged the girls, got back in the car and drove to London. We went to the hotel room and celebrated with tea and biscuits.
My God. What happened? Where did we all go wrong?
What year is this?
This is 1972.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Clough wasn't there either. He was on the Isles of Scilly with his elderly parents. I can't imagine it got too much wilder.
No.
But after that season, a bit of a feud begins with the Derby board. So it all kind of starts because Clough refuses to go on a pre-season tour of the Netherlands because they won't let him take his family with him. He then turns to the Derby fans because he accuses them of only cheering when they're winning, and he calls them a disgraceful lot. His kind of outspoken nature gets him some comparisons to another big sporting figure of the time, Muhammad Ali. And so everyone's being like, yeah, Brian Clough, he's the Muhammad Ali of football. And word of this gets all the way to Ali himself, who sends a call out to Brian.
There's some fella in London, England, named Brian Clough, some soccer player or something. I heard all the way in Indonesia that this fella talks too much. They say he's another Muhammad Ali. There's just one Muhammad Ali. I'm the talker. Now, Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
That's such a good clip.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It is so, so good.
I thought Ali's so fucking good as well. Even just the little rhyme, Clough, I've had enough.
Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
Has so much fun with it.
Yeah.
Sort of like the original cameo, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hell of a cameo.
But yeah, like his response is,
I want to fight him.
It's so it's good, not, that. Yeah. Because, you know, nowadays you get all these crossover things and you've got a PR team sticking a phone in somebody's face before a big boxing match or whatever it might be, and it's all teed up. That is just raw and pure, isn't it? That is some chancer of a journalist who said, have you heard this? Yeah. And he has reacted to it, and that is it. Yeah. And Clough has probably never experienced anything like that before. And he just, he can see his face on the clip. It's brilliant.
Because, like, English football is not the, like, global
phenomenon that it is now. Yeah. You know, if you had a, let's say, I'm trying to think of Deontay Wilder and a Pep Guardiola or whatever. I'm trying to think of an American and crossing over or whatever. And it would not have the same impact because you'd go, well, of course these guys kind of know who
they met at Salt Bay.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They sent each other a big bottle of Chateau Neuf de Pape or whatever.
It wouldn't feel like that.
No, it wouldn't. And that is, it's such a great...
It wouldn't be surprising in the same way either,
No, it wouldn't. Beautiful. Beautiful from Cluffy and beautiful from Ali.
So obviously Derby win the league in 72, which means that they qualify for the European Cup for possibly the first time. I'm not entirely sure of that. And they have a really good run. They make it to the semi-final where they're facing the great Juventus. And it's a very controversial match. So Juve win 3-1, but there's a lot of criticism of the referee afterwards. It also emerges that the referee accepted gifts from Juve before the game. And Peter Taylor, the assistant manager, says that he saw the Juve captain going into the referee's dressing room before the match and then again at half time. And then there's some pretty dodgy decisions as well.
What were the gifts? Do we know?
No.
No,
is it cash?
Yeah, it is a gift.
Sounds like they're not obscuring it very well.
Three rubber bands, which also seems to have some notes rolled up in between them.
Biscotti.
The biscotti.
That's what
Zach said. I didn't hear that. Biscotti.
But Clough comes out after the game and suggests very publicly that the ref's been bribed. He also refuses to speak to Italian reporters. He says, no cheating bastards do I talk to. I will not speak to any cheating bastards.
Hang on. We're not moving on without just picking up on that. I mean, fucking hell, mate. That is, really? Come on. Give it another go.
No cheating bastards
do I talk to. I will not speak to any cheating bastards.
It's very nasal.
It's very nasal.
That's quite Cluffy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty.
I think you want to go a bit at more Yorkshire, don't you? No cheating
bastards do I talk to. I will not talk to any cheating bastards.
Yeah?
Acceptable?
Wow. It's good. It's good. We need Mark Crossley in here, don't we?
Young man.
Yeah.
What I would say is, wasn't Clough famed for rarely criticising refs? He always stuck up for them, so it must have been really bad.
It was notoriously so. He also, in that interview, questioned Italian courage in the Second World War.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was actually years later, he does something similar to Arsene Wenger. He says, am I going to do the accent again?
Yeah, come on.
We got you out of the shit in two world wars, so don't come doing that fancy stuff with me.
The quote is brilliant as well, by the way.
I guess that generation, you're making a lot of war jokes, aren't you? Like, it was quite fresh.
I think so. Yeah.
I guess so. Apart from cowardly Europeans, Brian had one other enemy, and that was Leeds United, and in particular, their manager, Don Revy. So Brian saw Leeds and Don Revy as basically the opposite of everything that he represented in football. He saw himself as this, you know, this manager who really appreciated good quality football, technical players, whereas Leeds, in his eyes, were the sort of bullying, fouling, cheating team that dived a lot. And Don Revy had this, like, win at all costs mentality. Mm. So he saw their sort of philosophies as completely opposed to each other. And this all comes to a head in 1973 at the Yorkshire Sports Personality of the Year Awards.
And it's a big event, guys.
Does every county get one of those?
Just in Yorkshire.
Just God's own county.
It was a big event, though. So they had Howard Wilson, the former Prime Minister, presenting the top award, which goes to Leeds player Peter Mortimer. Clough is then scheduled to give a speech afterwards, and everyone's expecting him to just go up there and, you know, congratulate Peter Lorimer and whatever, few platitudes. But instead, he launches into a brutal tirade. So he says that Lorimer won despite being a cheating diver. He says to Leeds injury-prone winger Eddie Gray, if he'd been a racehorse, he would have been shot.
he's always out injured. Blue factory.
Yeah. He says Billy, he calls their star player Billy Bremner a little cheat, and rounds it all off by saying that Leeds should be deducted points and relegated to the second division for all their cheating and cynical football. And bear in mind that this event is taking place in Leeds. Yeah. Like, the entire audience are Leeds fans, and they start booing him, heckling him. Brian calls out one heckler and says, calls him a mumbler, and says, we are becoming a nation of mumblers. Stand on your feet if you have anything to say.
It's like an Undateables version of Brian Clough.
I'm looking forward to Jack's, you've thrown me in with the first section.
Yeah, it was unfortunate for you. Do you want me to try that quote?
Go on then.
Go on.
We are becoming a nation of mumblers. Stand on your feet if you have anything to say.
That was good,
That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Yorkshire's one of the easier accents, isn't it? No, not for me. The weird Clough T side.
As a Yorkshireman, I will tell you, it gets butchered a lot.
Yeah, like, yeah. It also depends which time.
In and outside of this room.
Well, then,
mainly in this room.
Mainly this room. But that goes for Irish. It goes for Scottish.
Yeah.
It goes for everything.
They're hard.
Hey, it's why I come and sit here.
Yeah. I don't know why exactly, but Zax is giving chicken run.
Yeah. Well, the woman, the wife.
I think the chicken who does the knitting. I'm not sure. Which one.
Yeah, I agree.
Just keep doing what you're doing, mate. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Anyway, so he has his run-ins with hecklers, and the whole event is a bit of a disaster, really. But a few days later, he doubles down and publishes an article in the Sunday Express headlined, I would put Leeds in Division 2. So,
or just saying, relegate them for cheating.
For cheating, basically, right. Which was optimistic, I think. But obviously, it doesn't go down well with people in Leeds, but it goes down even worse with Derby, the Derby board, who are just, you know, like, fuck's sake, he's just, you know, causing a scene. I think he also calls for some FA directors or whatever to be sacked, so... He's just like bringing the whole club into disrepute in their eyes. A few weeks later, it's the final straw when he is accused of showing two fingers to legendary Man United manager Sir Matt Busby at Old Trafford. Clough actually comes out afterwards and says that his two fingers were aimed at the Derby chairman, Sam Longson, because he didn't sort his wife out with tickets for the game.
That's actually more believable.
That is.
Well, that's your defence. No, no, I was just insulting you, my employer.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So probably worse.
He's clashing with them a lot, isn't he?
He's by this point, their relationship's really deteriorated and he ends up resigning. The Derby fans make this big campaign. They call for the board to be sacked instead and for Brian to come back. But it doesn't happen. He's decided that he's out.
I mean, it's another quite Mourinho moment. Because it's the sort of like, I need to run everything, otherwise I'm going. Mm. And so he goes at that point. I think Clough is expecting one of the big giants of English football to give him a job now, you know, like an Everton, a Liverpool, a Man United. Instead, he ends up with third division strugglers Brighton. They've got a rich chairman, who's Mike Bamber, who's like young and excited. So it's a big coup. But this is like Zinedine Zidane going to Fleetwood Town in terms of like unexpected news. Unfortunately, it doesn't go too well. So the very first team meeting takes place the night before a game, and Clough tells the players to meet him at this hotel. He turns up 2 hours late. So there are all the players just sitting there twiddling their thumbs. And then he struts in and immediately just starts shouting at a player with long hair. And she goes, when are you going to cut your fucking hair? So immediately they're all like, what the fuck? And then apparently he sort of like bollocks them for a few minutes just for no reason or other. And then just turns to them all and goes, anyone for a drink? And they're like, well, we've got a match tomorrow. So anyway, they have their drinks and the matches don't go well. So that first game, they're at home in the cup to non-league Waltham and Hersham.
Wow.
So you'd think nice sort of soft way to start your time at Brighton. They lose 4-0. So that's a huge cup upset. 3 days later, they're at home to Bristol Rovers. They lose 8-2.
Oh my God. Wow. Yeah, so some of these scorelines, by the way,
yeah,
are a bit bonkers, aren't they? We've had a 6-all, a 4-0 to a non-league team. And what was that one?
8-2.
8-2. Yeah. Okay. All right.
But I feel like it was quite often like that in the 70s, 80s. Yeah, the 70s. So you always just see these mad scorelines.
Like that Boxing Day picture everyone always
sees. Yeah, it does the rounds all the time, yeah.
But he's quite in a sort of like attacking, forward-thinking manager, isn't he? So you're going to ship a few goals when things aren't gelling. To be fair, he's not that committed to the cause. So the players say that Cluffy only turns up on Fridays and match days. They don't see him for the rest of the week. And he never was one of those managers who takes training, which is fine. I mean, Alex Ferguson and Brian Clough both did that.
And Neil Warnock as well.
Yeah. those three all did all right. but, you know, only Fridays and match days is a lot. And then there's a time where Clough misses a match because he goes to America to watch Muhammad Ali fight Joe Frazier. Which is taking the piss.
Was he hoping for a little backroom showdown, a little scrap?
I think they do become, him and Ali actually do form, I don't know if a friendship is quite accurate, but there's another time where Ali's on Parkinson. He was always on Parkinson,
wasn't he?
And Clough like pops up and asks a like friendly question from the crowd. So I think maybe him and Ali were sort of mates. They had a lot in common.
Quite cool.
Yeah. However, it's, you know, if you're Brighton, you're probably a bit fucked off that he's missing games to go and watch boxing matches. And then mid-season, he goes completely AWOL. And everyone's like, well, where's Brian Clough? And suddenly he pops up in the papers and he's in Tehran meeting the Shah of Iran about taking over as their national team coach. Which is...
I thought I knew a decent amount about Cloughy. Yeah. Did not know that.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Was that like the olden day Saudi Arabia, was it? Or
yeah, I guess it was. This is pre-revolutionary Iran, so the Shah's very Western looking and you know, there's a lot of money to be thrown at you. So it probably was a good deal. And he actually goes to Brighton and says, I want to do this. I want to leave and go and be Iran manager. And Mike Bamber, the owner's like, well, you fuck off. I'm paying you a shitload.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. He's on a 5-year.
That's a real what might have been. I'd love to see that. Brian Clough in Tehran.
Yeah. Getting Iran to the last eight of
this
the world.
This was actually around the time of the revolution as well, so it could have got quite spicy.
He could have definitely got caught up in that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's stuck in England in 1974, which is like miserable Britain, isn't it? It's 3-day week and all that stuff. Anyway, Brighton don't let him join Iran, and they finish 19th. It's all a bit of a disaster. There's a book about this era called Bloody Southerners, just about Clough at Brighton. And one of the players just says of Clough, he was a fucking head case, which I think catches it nicely.
Sums up.
So this is one of those jobs that just doesn't work out for Clough. And, you know, he's on a long contract, but there's sort of like talk of, is this going to work out? And then suddenly the bombshell. Leeds manager Dom Revie leaves to take the England job. and leads the reigning champions appoint none other than their nemesis, Brian Clough, as manager. I mean, like, this is a mental moment in English football, isn't it? It's sort of like Fergie taking the Liverpool job or, you know, something like that.
It really is. That's, I was trying to think of an equivalent. That is exactly like it. But it's worse because Ferguson, although hated perennially by Liverpool fans, he didn't slag them off to the extent that Clough did with Leeds fans in Leeds and insult them and tell them that they should be relegated and tell all the players that they should be cheats. Yeah. Incredible.
I mean, no top managers ever insulted their opponents like he did.
You do wonder about the decision-making there, don't you? With the Leeds board, you go, who the fuck has sat there and gone, oh yeah, the next manager of this football club should be Brian Clough.
Yeah. Like,
who? How the fuck have they come up with that?
I think if a few of the senior players wanted the job, so they were pissed off. We'll come back to them in a second. But then also, he was something like third on their list, and they couldn't get, what's his name, Jock?
Jock Steen.
Jock Steen was on the list, the Celtic.
Yeah.
Better get that right.
Celtic, you're
legendary
right.
Legendary Scottish manager, and they couldn't get him. And so it was a bit of a like, oh, do we go for it? And I think it was one of those decisions. You know when you do something, and then immediately you're like, like this, I don't feel like I've made the right call here.
Surely the reaction from the fans must have been mental as well.
Yeah.
Like they must have hated him after everything he'd said.
Yeah.
Perhaps the soft launching wasn't quite as nuanced as, no. You know, like now they'll kind of drip feed stuff out, won't they? They'll just tell some hapless journalist, oh, this guy might be coming in, and they'll drip feed it out, and then they'll see the fan reaction. And if everyone's going bonkers on Twitter or whatever, they go, oh, actually, we won't bother.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have done that those days. Yeah, it was just pin it up. On the
it's done.
On the, outside the stadium or whatever.
That was
on the
sort of the Mason
board.
Greenwood approach. Yeah. Right?
Well, do you remember Everton did it with Benitez? They were like, "We're thinking of getting Rafa Benitez," and then the fans went outside his home and held up signs being like, "We'll kill you." Yeah. And they still hired him.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point of that approach? They're not going to then pull back. Anyway, he signs for Leeds, and then Clough makes the first of a series of crucial errors. He signs his contract, and instead of going and meeting the players and the staff, he fucks off to Mallorca for 9 days. It's a bit of a running theme that he just seems to...
Yeah, just fucks off.
For a guy who's so intense about winning, he likes a bit of leisure time. It's comforting for the lazy among us. Anyway, so this holiday to Mallorca is seen as a crucial error because already everyone's like, you know, they have no manager for 9 days, basically, and everyone's wondering what's going on. And then Clough gathers the players for their first team meeting and somehow manages to outdo his performance at Brighton with this famous team talk. He opens, "Right, you fucking lot. As far as I'm concerned, you can take all the medals you've won and throw them in that bin over there because you've not won anything fairly. You've done it all by blooming cheating." So they're all just like, what the fuck? And then he turns to Norman Hunter, who's the bruising lead centre-back, and he says, "Hunter, you're a dirty bastard and everyone hates you. I know everyone likes to be loved, and you'd like to be loved too, wouldn't you?" So Norman Hunter's like, fuck off. And then in The Damned United, this famous book and film about
Brilliant.
Clough's time at Leeds, great film, they go a bit further. So in the film, they have Clough, he then does a series of kick-ups in front of the players, and then he swivels and volleys one in the top corner and just turns to the players and goes, "Let's see Don fucking Revy do that." And then they have training, and one of the players just puts in this horror foul on Clough and just buries him to the floor. I have heard from people who were present that that last bit did not happen. But
a little bit of tax on it, a little bit of mayo. That's
wasn't
exactly
wasn't there
want.
quite a lot of mayo in that film?
Yeah, the film they got the sued, film and the book got sued and had to pay out for defamation.
Well, the Clough family were quite cross about it, weren't they? I think obviously the portrayal of anybody in a film is going to be over dramatized. I don't think you really needed to over dramatize Clough, really. But it is a good film. If anybody's listening and they've not seen that, it's well worth it, isn't it? Stephen Graham plays Billy Bremner, by the way. So, yeah.
Love Stephen Graham.
Yeah, little sort of terror that he is.
Yeah, he plays it well.
Yeah, he does.
Billy Bremner's the ringleader. And apparently is one of the ones who felt wronged for not getting the manager's job, too.
Well, he was also one of the ones that Clough slagged off at the Yorkshire Sports Awards. So not surprised.
I think the film is obviously not true to the letter of what happened, but it does a really good job of like capturing how instantly he alienates all the players. And
you think though with that film that, because obviously the book got sued successfully by his family, that maybe when the film adaptation came around, the producer would be like, do you reckon we should should probably be quite careful here. Like, yeah, they do have a bit of a track record for legal proceedings, and they just do exactly the same thing.
Well, I think if someone else sued them, I'm not sure what, who, or what for. It wasn't, you know, Clough was dead when it came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. But then the Clough family, well, his son Nigel, who you might come onto or whatever, he was obviously, you know, a very good player, played under Brian at Nottingham Forest, and, you know, was played for Liverpool as well, and a couple of England caps, I think, in there, really good. And then obviously has now tried his hand at management and managed Derby, like his old man, went on to manage. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and did okay, I think, when they were in a bit of trouble and kind of kept them up a little bit, got sacked, came to my club, Sheffield United, and you hear the Clough surname, I didn't know much about Nigel, and you're expecting this incredible figure who is going to be a bit like his dad. Well, no, boring as fuck.
Really?
Yeah, boring as fuck. Crap manager, defensive football, just utterly shit. And I had just the worst experience of him managing my football club.
I really,
it was really disappointing. Yeah, really, really disappointing.
I thought you were going to build that up too. And you know what? He's a lovely fella.
No, boring as fuck.
Nigel Clough, if you're listening, fuck off.
Not he's really. Down at Mansfield, I think, something like that.
Yeah, he's done all right.
He's done okay.
It's a tough act to follow. Anyway, I mean, back in Leeds, Clough's alienated the players instantly, and it doesn't get better from there. And he manages 8 games, he gets 1 win, and then the players call a team meeting and they hold a vote of no confidence in him. And then they go to the board and that's it. It's curtains. In the damned United, there's this scene where the night before he's sacked, Cloughy phones Don Revie, his great nemesis, the former Leeds manager, and says, like, your boys don't want to play for me. I think this is sort of a late night glass of whiskey, perhaps. I don't know if that actually happened. Again,
you're not really sure yet.
Great bit of cinema. But what does happen? Leeds sack him. He lasts 44 days, which, I mean, back then, that's even more mad to have a spell that short. But Leeds sack him. And that night, ITV pull off a hell of a scoop. They get not just Clough to come on the sofa and talk to them straight after his sacking, but they have next to him Don Revie, England manager, former Leeds manager, and his old nemesis. And the two men try and hide the fact that they fucking despise each other and produce some real TV gold.
I wanted to have a crack at the European Cup this year.
Yes.
I think that was near and dear to your heart also.
Yeah. Yes.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. I believe that it was just a fraction, Don, whether you took the England job or had another shot at the European Cup.
That is totally true, because I was so involved with the players and everybody at Elvenwood.
Good lad. Now, I wanted to do that, and I want to do it better than you. You can understand that, can't you?
What I love about that interview is Brian Clough is sitting on the sofa. He's just been sacked after 44 days, 1 win, and he is lording it over Don Revie, who's the fucking manager of the reigning champions, Leeds, with the same team. And you know, there's that bit where he says, I bet that it was a really tough decision for you whether to try and win the European Cup or to take the England job. And Revie's like, yeah, I did. And he just goes, good lad. It's like really patronising. And there's another bit where he's like, yeah, there was no warmth at the club when you were there, Don. And there's a bit where he gets Don defending his own record. He's like, you were top of the disciplinary league. And Don's like really on the defensive. And it's a mark of the kind of charisma of the man. And the arrogance.
Arrogance, definitely. But also, I think it's quite a reasonable conversation, isn't it? I actually had in my head before we watched that clip here that it was quite a tasty, intense affair, which it was. But actually, it's quite a respectful exchange, isn't it?
Mm.
In many ways.
Given that they hated each other.
Given how ferocious the hatred was.
I think Clough's running rings around him. I mean, obviously, like, he's winning the TV battle but losing the war of the management game.
Yeah.
He just gets Don so defensive.
If you just watched that without knowing any of the context, you'd guess that Revie was the one who'd just been sacked.
Yeah.
Just how, like, sort of reserved and, you know, in the corner he is.
Yeah, he's a boring fuck, wasn't he? I'm Team Clough. Firmly Team Clough.
I think we all are, aren't we?
Yeah. Gotta be.
There is one bit in that where he says something like, I had to beat you. And he's like, I had to do one better than you. And he's like, well, we only lost 4 games. And he goes, then I'd only lose 3. And doesn't he years later do that with Forest?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Which is pretty amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Have that, Don.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a tasty interview. It's worth a watch. It's also mental that they managed to get those two together for that. That would never happen now.
Yeah.
That is crazy, isn't it?
There's a TV journalist who says of the interview, it was like watching a bickering couple about to get a divorce. It really is. It's like they're keeping it civil, but they just can't resist sniping.
Yeah. So he has, after being sacked at Leeds, Brian has 6 months out, and then he's appointed at second division Nottingham Forest. And that kicks off a pretty incredible run. So he's appointed 75. The following year, he reappoints Peter Taylor as his assistant, and they immediately get promoted, and the following season win the league. So incredible. Like, first season back in the first division, they win the league. They also go on a 42-game unbeaten run during that stint, which was only beaten by Arsenal in 2003-04, I think, that season.
It was
like, they broke his record a month before Clough died.
Oh, shit.
So he did congratulate them on it, but yeah, just shows what an insane stat that was.
Stood for a long time then, didn't it? That's awesome.
Did he congratulate them through quite gritted teeth?
Was it the same? It might be the same time that he questioned French courage in the Second World War.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that was the time, yeah.
Like, he's on his deathbed and still just like throwing barbs. 1979, they make it to the League Cup final, and they're playing against Southampton. And they're in their hotel room the night before near Wembley, and the players are all like planning an early night. And Cluffy's having none of it. He gets them down to the bar, lines up loads of bottles of champagne. Is like, you're not leaving until we finish this. So they're up until 1:30 in the morning. Tony Woodcock, who's one of their star players, has to be carried off to bed at 1:30 a.m.
The night before the League Cup.
The night before the League Cup final. But they win. They beat Southampton, and the following season, incredibly, they win the European Cup as well. They beat Malmo in the final. So this is like, this has never been matched, really. Bring a team from the second division, get promoted, win the league, following season European Cup. You can't even imagine a team doing that now. The following season, they make the final again of the European Cup, and this time it's at the Bernabeu. And apparently they arrived in Madrid and rocked up to their training pitch, and Clough decided the pitch was too hard. But on their drive there, he'd spotted a roundabout on the outskirts of Madrid that had lovely lush green grass. So he got up to drive back there, and they did their pre-match training on the roundabout.
That is unreal, isn't it?
Yeah. And they won that as well. They were playing Kevin Keegan's Hamburg in the final and beat them 1-0. After that, though, they begin a bit of a slide. So he falls out with Peter Taylor, his long-term assistant, who often is kind of seen as the brains behind it. Obviously, Brian Clough was also an incredible manager himself, but a lot of his success is often tied to this partnership with Peter Taylor. But they fall out. Peter Taylor decides he's going to retire after their fallout. But then 6 months later, he's appointed manager of Derby. And Clough really sees this as a betrayal of him. And it gets even worse when Derby sign one of Nottingham Forest's star players. So Clough, at this point, he calls Taylor a snake in the grass and says, "If his car broke down and I saw him thumbing a lift, I wouldn't pick him up. I'd run him over."
That's his best mate.
Yeah, his best mate.
He's his soulmate.
Yeah, exactly.
he does strike you as the person, kind of person who'd hold a grudge.
Yeah, and fall out with his best friend forever. Did they ever reconcile?
No, they sadly didn't.
Really?
No.
That is sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it is quite tragic. After everything that they'd achieved together. But you don't cross Brian Clough. That's the moral of the story.
You don't try and thumb him down for a lift if your car's broken down either.
I've sort of got the same policy with my sort of podcasts.
Your podcast co-host.
If you chose to leave.
I was going to say, if you two, you know.
If you cross me.
I will.
Not only would you not pick him up, you'd run him over.
Fucking over, yeah.
Okay, I will bear that in mind.
Should you defect to
facial reconstruction
surgery.
Not going to happen, don't worry.
Yeah, I'll remind you of that one, mate.
We'll see, yeah. Anyway, after Peter Taylor leaves, the mid-80s are much less successful for Nottingham Forest. They're mid-table mostly. I think they finished third a couple of times, but nothing compared to the glory of the late 70s and early 80s. They do, though, manage to bring through a new generation of players, among them Stuart Pearce, who signs in 1985. And this era is still kind of the time when players weren't earning big bucks. And Stuart Pearce, alongside being a stalwart in the Nottingham Forest defence, was also working on the side as an electrician. And he'd advertised this in the Nottingham Forest match day programme. So it's a little, got a picture of it here. It's a cut from the programme where it just says Stuart Pearce, electrician, complete household rewires, maintenance, everything, work guaranteed. But yeah, it's quite incredible. I'm not sure if Stuart was actually the one who was popping around to fix you.
Yeah, I think it's his brother. Didn't Clough confront him on this in the dressing room?
Yeah.
And effectively say, I bet it's not you who comes around shit house or whatever.
Yeah,
and does he make him come around and fix his wife's lamp or something?
So it's her iron. So the story goes that Pearce gets called up for England and he comes back after his first cap, and Cloughy's thinking that, you know, Stu's getting a bit big for his boot. So he decides to bring him down a few pegs, and he comes into the dressing room carrying this carrier bag with something really heavy inside it, like plonks it down in the middle of the dressing room, and they sit down and say, like, did everyone see Stu's debut at the weekend? And everyone's like, yeah. He's like, what do you think, how did he do? And Stuart's like, I think I did pretty well. And he's like, I thought you were fucking shit. And then he pulls out the match day program and he's like, I could see this, you're an electrician, eh? He's like, so if my barber's, she wants to get the lamp rewired, you got to come round and do it. And Stu's like, oh no, actually, that'll be my brother. And he's like, well, you're a fraud, aren't you? You're a fraud. You're coming here, you advertise your electrician services, it's not even you. And then he gets out this bag and gets out his iron. And he's like, Barbara's iron is broken. It's going to be on my desk Saturday morning or you're not playing.
It's sensational.
So, and he fixes it. Stuart.
So he does it.
He does it.
Yeah, he gives it to his brother, doesn't he? Old Stuart.
But yeah, I mean, I just love this era. The fact that Stuart Pearce is like captaining Nottingham Forest, captaining England, and is still running an electrician's business on the side.
And getting forced to fix our Barbara's iron.
There's another great story from this time. They sign a guy called Dave Curry from Barnsley. They pay 650 grand for him, which is quite a lot of money.
Mega
at that
money
time.
Then, isn't it? Yeah.
But pretty quickly, Clough decides that Curry's not for him. And 3 weeks into pre-season, they're in the dressing room after a game, and he looks at Dave Curry and it's like, Dave, have you got a house yet? And Dave's like, no, I haven't, boss. He's like, don't bother. And just cancels his contract.
Really?
Yeah.
What, writes off the 650 grand?
Yeah.
Well, wow. We probably won't talk about the moments that much. He's got this mix of like, he can be really kind. A lot of people say like, if he thought you needed a kind word, he would really help. And he was really good to people's families and stuff. But he's also just so cutting. Yeah. Like there's a story where Brian Rice was signing for Forest.
Curry and Rice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Who's next? Steve Chutney. Brian Rice came for like to meet Clough to see if they could do a deal, and he came with his dad, and his dad had earrings, and he just goes, son, before we carry on, tell your dad to take his earrings out. Not even addressing the dad, just making him take the earrings.
He's so
apparently
good.
The dad was just like, take him out.
I love things like that. Yeah. But no, you know, like that is, you know, the thing is, everybody quite clearly, not everybody in the world, but a vast majority of people love Brian Clough. Mm. And you do think, why? Because all the stuff we've talked about here sounds like a bit of a twat, doesn't it? But when I think of Brian Clough, I only think positive things. Mm. So he must have done something right at some stage.
Yeah, I mean, the sense of humour is nice as well, even though it's quite rude. Yeah, but I think he was also, could be extremely kind.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about those because it's the upshot. It's not funny. There's another story on the Quickly Kevin podcast. They do quite a really good edition on Clough, and the comedian Matt Ford's on it. And he says he was a ball boy at Forest when he was really young, and he went into the like lounge area before the game. And Cloughy was in the corner looking possibly a little bit worse for wear, and he sort of called him over, come here, son. And Ford's, you know, was quite shy, and he suffered from quite bad acne at the time, so he was particularly shy, and he sort of shuffles over to Clough, and as Clough gets a sight of his face and the acne, he just goes, bloody hell, lad, what have you been doing? Edding pizzas? Just so cruel. But we can laugh about it now, I suppose, as can Matt Ford.
Yeah, luckily.
There is one person, though, who isn't afraid of him, and that is a young apprentice who's cleaning the dressing room at Forest. So the 16-year-old apprentice, you know, part of your duties is you have to muck in with all the sort of housework of the ground. So he's cleaning the dressing room one day and the phone in the dressing room rings and he answers it and it's Clough. He says, "Young man, I want a pot of tea, 6 cups brought to the boardroom now." And the apprentice just goes, "Sorry, I'm busy," and hangs up, which is brave. And the phone rings again. It's Clough. "Young man, I don't think you understand. Stop what you're doing, make a pot of tea, and bring it up to the boardroom with 6 cups. Now!" And the apprentice replies, "Sorry, don't think you understand. I'm busy."
Wow.
Brave. Puts the phone down. Finally, the phone rings again. "Young man, do you know who this is on the phone?" And the apprentice replies, "Yes, the manager, Brian Clough. Do you know who I am?" And Clough says, "No." And the apprentice replies, "Well, then make your own fucking tea," and hangs up.
Wow.
Brave. And as far as I can tell, no one ever works out who this apprentice is.
He's never seen again.
Yeah. Yeah. He just disappeared soon.
He was caught thumbing a lift just after. Jesus.
Amazing story. Then, of course, there's the famous incident in 1989. So in the late 80s, having rebuilt the squad, Forest actually, they go on another tear. I think they, don't they make something like 6 cup finals in 4 years?
Something like
they
that.
They win like a trophy a season for those last sort of 4 years. In 1989, they beat QPR 5-2 in the League Cup and the fans are delirious and they invade the pitch. And this is the cause of this famous video that I'm sure everyone's seen, but if not, look it up, where there's this pitch invasion and Clough's just on the touchline knocking out fans who are running onto the pitch, just punching them. One of them, Sean O'Hara, says, "I felt a big blow on the back of my head, a real solid punch. When I turned round, there was Brian Clough screaming, 'Get off the bloody pitch!'" Mental.
Imagine that, running on to celebrate your team's victory, yeah, and your manager is the one twatting you on
it's
the back of the head.
It's such a good, he's wearing his iconic green jumper. It's a hell of a clip. And I guess now you would probably get sacked for that, wouldn't you? If like...
What, for assaulting paying supporters
like
of your football
club? Roberto De Zerbi was like knocking out his own fans during...
Didn't Eric Dyer got banned for matches for just like climbing into the stands to confront a fan, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think if the manager did that... But instead, the next day, the fans come round and apologise and Cluffy, never missing an opportunity, invites the news cameras. So again, there's great footage of this where he makes them apologise to him and then he forces them to kiss him on the cheek to show they're sorry.
Can I just say, that is unreal, isn't it? That would not happen now. Like, fucking hell. Imagine, like, loving the manager of your club that much that you can...
Yeah,
like you feel the need to apologise to him for celebrating. By the way,
and they're kind of loving it. There's quite a bit. He's like, "Come on, then, give me a kiss." And one of them goes, "You're gonna have to chase me."
Oh my
god! I think
god.
It actually might have been the catchphrase of some 80s comedian or something. I didn't really get it, but it's all just like quite good natured and I mean, probably a treasured memory for those fellas.
Oh yeah, probably
because he was just like God in Nottingham, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's fucking bonkers, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Good way of just diffusing the whole thing. And the tough love continues when Forrest signed Roy Keane. We talked about this on the Roy Keane episode,
I'm
going to retell the story for the benefit of people who didn't hear it. So he sort of brings Roy Keane through. There's this really emotional moment where Roy Keane's just laying out the team jerseys and he just says, "You're playing, son," and just picks him there and then. But sensing perhaps that Roy, like others before him, is getting a bit big for his boots, Clough does give him a bit of tough love after an FA Cup tie with Palace. So Roy gives away a goal by under-hitting a back pass to the goalkeeper. And at the end of the game, he's walking into the dressing room, sort of quite downbeat. And suddenly Clough appears from behind the door of the dressing room and just punches him in the face, knocks him to the ground and just yells, "Don't pass the ball back to my goalkeeper, young man." Keane's just like lying there, shocked.
It's unreal. But doesn't Keane then go on to like love playing under Clough?
I think even before and after and possibly during the punch he does. Yeah, I think in Roy Keane's world, that's sort of like correct justice, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, probably deserved it.
Yeah.
Do your job.
I think
I'd love to have set Brian loose on Paul Pogba.
And then you'd think that Brian might meet his match when Wimbledon's crazy gang visit the City Ground. I think we told this story in the Crazy Gang episode as well, but I'm going to retell it. So this story is told by Mark Crossley on the Under the Kosh podcast, and it is a classic. The Crazy Gang arrive at the City Ground. You've got Vinnie Jones stepping off the bus, leading like his band of merry psychopaths like John Fashanu. and they've got a boombox with them, the latest in sort of annoying technology. And Jones has got it on his shoulder. He's blaring music. They go to the dressing room, all really intimidating stuff. And Clough, meanwhile, is in the Forest dressing room delivering his team talk. And suddenly he hears this like booming bass coming from the away dressing room. And he turns to his assistant, Alan Hill, and he's like, "Illy, can you go and tell them to turn that music down?" So Alan Hill's like, "Oh, yeah, all right." Shuffles down the corridor, goes, knocks on the door, and Vinnie Jones answers, and he's like, "The gaffer's trying to give a team talk. Would you mind just turning it down a bit?" And Vinnie Jones, "Oh, yeah, sorry, of course. No problem." Turns the music down. By the time Alan Hill's got back to the dressing room, they've turned it back up again. So Clough's like, "Fucking hell. Illy, will you go and tell them, please, will you turn the fucking music down?" So Alan Hill's like, "Oh, okay, fine." Goes back down. As you can imagine, the same thing happens. Jones turns it down, gets back to the dressing room, and they've turned it back up. This time, Clough's had enough, and he just marches down the corridor, bangs on the Wimbledon door. They answer. He just strides in, picks up their boombox, lifts it high above his head, and smashes it into the ground, and just goes, "Now play your fucking music, Wimbledon!" And Forrest win.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. It's a great end to that story. I mean,
you need a guy like Brian Clough to deal with a gang like the Crazy Gang.
Amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah. However, this is basically the end for Clough. What's weird is it all falls apart of Forest very suddenly. So they're in the League Cup final, the 92 season. And then the first season of the Premier League comes around. They win the first game of the season against Liverpool. I think it's the first televised game in Premier League history. Mm. So everything's looking rosy, but it all falls apart. And I think Clough, by this point, we haven't really talked about his drinking, but it's becoming a serious problem. Mm. And they go down. And that is the end of Brian Clough. He resigns, I think, that maybe, you know, was told to leave. And so it's quite a sudden ending, having, you know, had a great finish to the 80s, that this great manager just suddenly disappears. And I think he's in his 50s. He's young.
Mm.
But he doesn't take another job.
He could have quite easily carried on for another 10 or 15 years, couldn't he? You know, in management, if it wasn't obviously for, you know, the drinking, which was very, very sad. You know, I think there becomes an optimum point, doesn't there, with the drinking, where actually you get some great stories out of it. He's obviously still functioning pretty well. I think in probably 3 or 4 years, you know, before that season where they ultimately go down. But obviously it takes control and he's then... You know, we as kind of people of our age, we see all the good stuff, but we don't get to see the bad stuff too much, which I think is probably a good thing. But, you know, legendary figure. And it is a shame that he isn't still around or wasn't around for, you know, the early noughties or whatever, to see some of these great players and give his insight. He'd been a great pundit, yeah, wouldn't he?
Because he did do a bit of punditry.
He did. I think he sorted himself out to a point, didn't he? And actually was still a pretty good pundit. And come up with obviously some golden lines, you know, which is still available on
YouTube. Okay, I'll give you one. He said, on the influx of foreign players in the British game, he said, "I can't even spell spaghetti, never mind talk Italian. How could I tell an Italian to get the ball? He might grab mine."
Brilliant.
And then obviously the famous one, he said, "I wouldn't say I was the best manager in the business, but I was in the top one." Which is fantastic. The classic arrogance.
Fantastic.
It's a shame, really, that he didn't call it a day one season early. I think, because with the Premier League starting 93, them going down in the first Premier League season, it would have been quite a nice symmetry for him to end then and just be, because he is probably one of, if not the most iconic figure of pre-Premier League football, really. So if he'd called it a day then.
I quite like that he has this link to the modern age.
Yeah.
I suppose,
rather than feeling like someone who belongs to a completely different time.
Yeah. Although they did get relegated.
No, but, you know, he played Premier League and he sort of like he managed people like Roy Keane and Stuart Pearce. So he, you know, the legacy lives on, even if he's just like doing a bit of grumpy punditry. But but I mean, he died at 69 and you just think by any rights, he should have been doing punditry, you know, into his 70s. And you know, Roy Hodgson managed in his 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a little bit sad, but I guess, you know, some of these people burn bright for a short time and then...
Yeah.
How could he have topped Forrest? If he'd gone and managed fucking Iran after that, it probably would have felt a bit...
Yeah, it probably would have been odd. Yeah, exactly.
Should have managed England, of course.
But the stories live on, don't they? I mean, all these players who played under him, they don't dislike him, you know, despite what we've said about him being completely totalitarian, you know, just law and order, bit of a bastard at times, quite cutting. Every player he's played under him always comes out and just speaks how... amazing it was to have played under him. So yeah,
there it's you quite go. That sort of us and them mentality that a lot of managers utilise so effectively, that he just made the Nottingham Forest players feel like they were like the antithesis to everything that Leeds were, and Leeds were obviously the most successful team of that era. So just building your sense of like family around that is, it really makes, yeah. And he obviously was like the father figure within that family. So people are just so sort of loyal to him.
Yeah.
And back-to-back European Cups. I mean, you can't fucking argue with that.
No, too right.
Having got promoted.
Although Forrest do go on about that fucking
thing. We are sick of
it. I wish you hadn't fucking bothered doing that.
Well, I think that's all we got time for. Thanks a lot, Craggy, for
my pleasure
coming and talking about the great man. Hope we've done him justice.
I think you have. Well done, lads. Thanks for having me. And a great episode again.
Yeah, hell yeah. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, and apologies for the horrific attempts at accent. Yeah,
apologies to the Brian Clough estate. Are we going to get sued?
You'll be getting a letter through you too.
For accent defamation.
Thanks a lot for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.